Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. In the 17 years William Whitener has been in Kansas City, he's been credited with transforming the Kansas City Ballet. A new performance space, new partnerships, new choreographers, a company's budget that's tripled to $7 million, a transformed ballet. At 61, Whitener is leaving Kansas City for a new dance life in New York. We'll catch up with Bill Whitener in just a moment. Later on this hour, Kansas City's newest James Beard Award winner, Chef Colby Geraltz. And finally this hour, our weekend to-do list. But now, William Whitener's 17-year journey with the Kansas City Ballet. And Bill, welcome back. Congratulations, and so nice to have you here again.
Thank you.
Let me just guess here. It's been a fast 17 years.
It has.
Has it? Yeah. How quickly did it go by for you?
What's that?
How quickly did it go by?
Well, you know, we were talking earlier that 17 seems to be a kind of a unique number. I left for New York from Seattle as a young dancer when I was 17. Tried to burst upon the scene,
yeah,
like most kids who go back to dance and get onto the stages in New York. And so this is a different kind of 17. I'm 16.
A more mature 17.
Yeah, yes. And I'm going back to New York, and the city is the same yet different. Mm-hmm. And but the thing that hasn't switched is how I feel about the art form.
It's still strong.
You know, if it gets in your system, which I think for a lot of dancers, it's it arrives when you're 5, 6, 7 years old. I was watching Fred Astaire movies and was following along as a 7-year old in the basement with our black and white TV. It's kind of how I learned to dance, and then you discover there's places you can train and formalize it.
What was it about Fred Astaire? What was it about dance, Bill, that just got in your blood? What was the magic there that captivated you like that?
Movement and rhythm.
Hmm. And what about that?
Well, and with Fred Astaire, there was sound because mm-hmm. of tap dancing. Joy. I think as a kid, you don't use the word technique, but you know something's going on. That mm-hmm. is when you try to follow along, you don't look exactly like Fred Astaire, but you get the idea. Motion, music, these are all driving forces. I think it's primarily music, actually, and rhythm that drive you towards the movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that never goes away, actually.
Huh. No. Even now?
Oh, no, not at all. I might perform again. I don't know. I'm opening up all my options. I mean, it would be entirely different, but people are dancing in their 50s and 60s. They're not doing the athletic kind of work, but it doesn't mean that there can't be a meaningful dance created in your 60s, and it can actually be quite deep and moving.
What can't you do now that you could do back when you were 17? Is it dramatically different?
Well, you can't jump.
Yeah.
For men, especially ballet dancing men, jumping starts to get a little difficult in the late 30s. Although
I can relate to that.
Different kind of bodies working now. I mean, I retired in 1989, and people are working into their 40s, and women up into their 50s now on point as ballet dancers.
And that's new. That's a new development.
Margot Fonteyn was able to do that. She's in the previous generation, Dame Margot Fonteyn, the great partner of Rudolf Nureyev.
Mm-hmm.
But she was one of few. Galina Ulanova in Russia danced quite a while, and Maximova, another great ballerina in Russian. But most dancers in the ballet would retire in their late 30s, and now they're moving into their 40s, a number of them. But the backs can go for the men because of partnering. It's heavy lifting,
mm-hmm.
even though it's coordinated with the woman, and she springs from the floor, so you can get her into the air by attaching to her rhythm. So backs are vulnerable. Knees are vulnerable. I don't have any surgeries or persisting physical problems, so I probably got out just in time. I was about 38.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, you can dance forever. That's actually the title of a book by Daniel Negrin, one of the choreographers who we worked with years ago. We recreated a solo of his called Strange Hero, about a gangster. And he believed you could keep going. You just modify and alter and change.
I was going to say, what do you bring to it now? We're talking about what you can bring to it physically. What can you bring to it that you couldn't bring maybe 17 years ago?
Knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom. A form of editing. You can get to the essence more quickly. You're probably not as decorative.
Is there an emotion you bring to it that you couldn't before? A maturity, in a sense?
That's a good way of putting it. Yes. What I'm really interested in at this point as a choreographer, and I've made a piece for next season called Triple Play.
I was going to ask. You're bringing it back here.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. premiering in a couple of weeks in St. Louis at the Dance St. Louis Festival called Spring for Dance. It's a lot of companies from the Midwest and elsewhere on the program. And that piece features Molly Wagner and Logan Pichars and traces the arc of a relationship through three piano pieces by Francis Poulenc. They're called Trois Nocturnes. And we've really penetrated into the motivation behind the movement. What makes you move? Why? Or the questions that I posed to the dancers yesterday, you need to know why, where, when, how, what, when you're moving through a dance.
What do you mean by that?
I'm using...
Something like you're talking about a journalist interviewing somebody.
Right, yeah. Well, we are a form of journalism. It's the body writing in space. And I was referring specifically to a new work that is performing, we're performing it this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday matinee, the Kaufman Theater. Carol Armitage has made energy made visible. And because of her background with Merce Cunningham, the movement needs to be very specifically motivated because people aren't always doing the same thing at the same time. So in order to not create pandemonium, but a kind of controlled, natural, one might say chaotic world, a change in direction, a motivation moving into space, a retreat, all those sorts of things have to be reasoned. So,
is this piece sort of like jazz? Is it?
It is. Bobby Watson plays live.
Mm-hmm.
So he plays sometimes over pre-recorded cuts of his own music and sometimes solo live.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's not the same every night, and yet there are boundaries because there's beginnings and ends to six different sections. And Bobby is cueing off the dancers. The dancers are cueing off him. So it's a highly spontaneous event. It's a dance event,
wow.
Actually.
Wow.
But that's why I brought up those elements to
yeah.
the dancers. Why, where, what, when, how.
There has to be a rationale behind what they're doing.
Well, it gives you a variety of choices. You can say, now it's about when, or later it's about what. It breaks it up in an interesting way, which is refreshing to the viewer's eye.
Yeah, I was really struck by the piece you're talking about, this energy made visible that you're doing this weekend. You know, it's a work based on the creative process of 20th century painter Jackson Pollock. And I'm just wondering, what was the motivation for the piece? And describe it to us, because it sounds so interesting.
Well, Carol Armitage hails from Madison, Wisconsin, but grew up in Lawrence.
Yeah.
And she was a student of Balanchine's. Actually in Switzerland. He was working in Geneva simultaneously when he was working with his own company, New York City Ballet, in the States. So she had firsthand experience with him, and then she joined, as I said, the Merce Cunningham Company, Modern Dance Group. Carol has worked a lot with painters and has been part of the art scene in general in New York. She was known as the punk ballerina at one point, of course, the 1980s. And she did a piece called Drastic Classicism, and it was downtown Manhattan in a club. She had point shoes, or probably black leather point shoes, and spiked hair and a loud score.
Mm-hmm.
And that really put her across. The reviews are amazing for her at that time. I just reread one in The New Yorker by Arlene Croce. So she became very celebrated and especially popular in France and all over Europe, actually. She's continued to choreograph. She's a little younger than me. And this is her second piece for us.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's...
But taking on Jackson Pollock strikes me as such a monumental challenge.
Well, you know, it's a launching point for mm-hmm. her. It's not literal. She's not trying to recreate his process. But there are similarities in dance and painting, especially modern painting. And I think that that's almost enough to know. We do have video projections and feed and so mm-hmm. on.
We're visiting with William Whitener, who's retiring after 17 years with the Kansas City Ballet. I'm wondering if going back to the ballet itself, did you get done what you wanted to get done?
Mostly.
Are you leaving much on the table here or not?
Mostly, I did. I mean, when you think how we started at the Westport Allen Center with very little space,
yes.
shared space with different not-for-profit organizations.
And look at you today, Bill.
And look what happened. Right?
Yeah.
It took a while. You know, we'd looked at the powerhouse in my first year here.
This is the new home of the ballet you're mm-hmm. talking about now, just west of Union Station. Yeah.
Yes, the Todd Bollender Center for Dance and Creativity was the powerhouse, the feeder to the Union Station. So I'd seen it with our general manager, Martin Cohen, when I first arrived.
It was a coal bin, basically, mm-hmm. wasn't it? A giant coal bin.
Yeah, and you still see the shafts.
You kept some of that when you redesigned it. Yeah.
Yeah, they look beautiful. It's winning all sorts of architectural awards.
Yeah. It's a staggering building.
It really is. It's one of the finest facilities for dance in the country. So that was in the cards, and we spent a lot of time looking at various sites all over town. And then we got to the point that this could happen.
Was it hard for you to visualize what it could be given what it was?
Not so much because it's a space that doesn't have very many columns. And that's what holds back development of dance spaces in New York and other places are these interfering columns.
Mm-hmm. And you got to get rid of those columns in order to have the kind of space your dancers need to do what they do.
Yeah. Right. Otherwise, the Joffrey Studios in New York, for instance, had two big columns right in the middle of a large studio, and people claim they can see in the choreography that space, that unused space.
It manifests itself down the road here, yeah. Yeah.
We dodged. I think they had foam rubber on them just in case we
collided. Push, yeah. But when you think about the Bollender Center today, that's just got to be one of the great joyous things in your career, I'm just guessing here.
It is. You know, Mark Morris, the great modern dance choreographer, also from Seattle. We both were different generations, but Seattle born. He came through recently with his company, and he toured the Bollender Center. And I turned to him and said, look what's happened in our lifetimes, aside from any other career achievements. Both of us have been associated with the development of dance centers. His is right opposite Brooklyn Academy of Music. And that's a big gift to the arts community.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say, along those lines, you know, Kansas City is a barbecue town. Hopefully it's still a jazz town. It's a sports town, to be sure. Is it now a ballet town?
Isn't a ballet town. I think for it to be a ballet town, you'd probably have to have another competing ballet company.
Mm.
Another group, or it wouldn't even necessarily have to be a ballet company, but let's look at Chicago. Has the Joffrey Ballet moved from New York, where I had danced with them, that they've relocated in Chicago, and they have the Hubbard Street Jazz mm-hmm. Company. So I think it's important for artists to rub up against each other to compete in a healthy kind of way. And
are there any signs that Kansas City is going to get a second company?
Let's hope. Let's hope. I mean, wouldn't it be great if there was a jazz dance company here?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Hubbard Street in Chicago has become more of a contemporary dance company. They started out more with a jazz group. But to make a real ballet town, I think it has to do with the whole dance scene more than singularly the ballet company itself. There needs to be a really fertile environment, a lot of new work being made, grassroots kinds of things, and then more than one professional company.
So we've got the makings of turning Kansas City into a ballet town.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's the more dance, the better. I'm a lucky guy in that I was performing in the 1970s and 80s in New York, and that's what's now called the golden era or the dance boom. And there was so much going on, and each company fed the other, and the ideas were all floating, and there's a high level of creativity, and most of all, a lot of new work being created, new ideas being explored.
What holds ballet back, just from a 10,000-foot vantage point here, not just in Kansas City, what holds the art form back from being more broadly accepted than it is today?
And that's a particularly American point of view, because this doesn't exist in Russia or Europe, and really not in Asia, and not in South America even.
You might say the same thing about jazz.
Yeah. I think partly because it's a French word.
Hmm.
Dance obviously has taken hold in many different levels and is now popular again on television. And ballet being a French word is suggests you might not get it if you don't speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and jazz has the same problem. I have to keep going back to the same. Well, wine has the same problem. People are intimidated by it, Bill.
Yeah, I don't really understand that about jazz, because it has informed everything from Balanchine's work. He was very public about his fascination with jazz and the elements that entered Stravinsky's music, and our classical composers, Aaron Copland and so on, Leonard Bernstein, used jazz.
So. But so many of our great art forms, classical music, suffers from the same thing. People feel intimidated by it. They can't quite fully embrace it. And, you know, that sort of idea, I think, it evolves and modifies over the years, but the essential concern remains the same. People find it a little bit too much for them. A lot of folks do, not everyone.
Right. And this has to do with K-12 education.
Okay.
And having just read...
you hear that a lot.
Yeah, having just read How Music Works by David Byrne, he spends quite a bit of time talking about traveling internationally and looking at communities that have integrated music and dance into their society, their culture, and where that can spring up naturally so that you don't have any kind of barrier because you do it. Mm-hmm. And actually, most everybody has tapped their foot or gotten up out of the chair to move or dance when something moves them. So ballet is clearly a particularly demanding technical use of the body as the instrument. And it's based on rotation. So in that sense, it's unnatural. We don't walk in a turned-out position. We walk with our legs parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's the ongoing differences between modern dance, which accepts the ground and gravity, and ballet, which was meant to be effortless and soaring and often in flight. But of course, the best of ballet dancing has lots of elements from modern dance.
William Whitener is our guest. He's leaving the Kansas City Ballet after 17 years. If you want to join our conversation with Bill, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, up-to-date at kcur.org, or you can tweet us at kcur-up-to-date. You know, you'll take a final bow on Sunday at the final curtain of the Kansas City Ballet spring program. What do you anticipate that moment will be like for you, Bill?
Well, it's one of many because I'm in show business. It will be touching because this has been a good, healthy length of time. So I've been able to achieve a lot in 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as is the case with anyone who's remaining in the arts, I'm moving to New York and going to work probably in a variety of venues and with different sorts of performers, actors and opera singers and, of course, dancers. Go back to working with ice skaters and ballroom dancers. I've done a lot of different things previously and some of which I've continued to do on occasion while I've been working here. So we think forward. As I think most people think forward. But if you're in the arts and in the freelance aspect of the arts, which is what I'm entering, then you're looking on to what else is there to do? Could I contact David Byrne, for instance, who I've worked with Twyla Tharp in the on the Catherine Wheel, which was an original score by David Byrne, and talk to him about K-12 education and what his thoughts are. And globally, what could we achieve?
Mm-hmm.
What can we learn from Indonesia, for instance?
Why are you leaving? What was it about this point in time that brought you to this big decision in your life to pack up and pull out?
Well, it's Act Three, as Jane Fonda says in her book. We have our lives are divided somewhat into acts. I mean, you can think of it that way. And this is an opportune time to be able to do what I just described before I get much older. I'm in my early 60s, so I have a lot of energy and I'm ready to dive back in there with a variety of performers. And I also wanted to make certain I was here to usher in, along with our whole team, the Kauffman Center and the Bollinger Center, get these up and running. So the next director now has a very different situation than I had in 1996. In 96, we were building towards this kind of a scrappy outfit with a lot of talent. And now we've done some heavy lifting and climbed that mountain and put our stake there, and it's time to hand that to someone who can now look into the future and start to integrate all these pieces.
Speaking of the next person, the next artistic director, I believe you're on the committee looking for that person. Who's it going to be? Where are we in the process?
I'm actually not on that committee.
You're not on the committee.
No.
You should be on that committee, Bill.
We think we know. the person has been contacted, and it just hasn't been publicized yet.
Oh, so we're at the brink of a decision here.
Yeah.
And you can't say who we're talking about yet.
Not my job.
Okay. A listener writes us up to date at kcur.org. What is the difference for the company when they danced classical repertoire as opposed to contemporary choreography like the Carol Armitage Bobby Watson piece?
We've never stopped dancing classical repertory. So what I call our repertory is mixed repertory. Largely 3 to 4 ballets in the same evening with either 1 or 2 intermissions. So what the public has been seeing both through Todd's era, Todd Bollinger and mine, is a mix of classical work, meaning, the classics, an act from Swan Lake, for instance, an act from The Sleeping Beauty. Those are the great Tchaikovsky ballets. Coppelia, Romeo and Juliet would be considered classical, yet with a lot of pantomime and acting. And then Carol Armitage's piece is... The women are on in point shoes, so it embodies the use of classical technique with a modern sensibility. So we're not unlike the Nelson that you would see something made today and something made in yesteryear.
The Kansas City Ballet's William Whitener is our guest. He's departing after 17 years. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Pam from Lee's Summit. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning.
Hi.
Bill, I sat next to Meryl Ashley and her husband when my husband and I went on a cruise several years ago. And I just wondered if you ever had the opportunity to dance with her.
I didn't dance with Meryl Ashley. We're about the same age. She was a leading dancer at New York City Ballet and one of the most technically proficient women of her and my era. We did, however, share an experience at the Metropolitan Opera. Backstage, we were invited to see Tomasavero Bando put on his makeup for his performance in Kabuki Theater, which was extraordinary because you can't make a mistake. He came in with just enough time to get it done, and he deliberately timed it so that he couldn't make a mistake with the makeup. So, and I knew her and saw her dance many times. She was absolutely extraordinary.
It was really fun to get to know her for a week. And we have corresponded since. And she was just really amazing. I was embarrassed that I didn't know her because I read many books about ballerinas, but I didn't know her. And I wish I had prior to meeting her. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. You know, what, you've danced with the Joffrey Ballet. You've danced with Twyla Tharp Dance. What's the difference?
Well, Bob Joffrey gave Twyla her first chance in the early 70s, a piece called Deuce Coop, Dance to the Beach Boys. And this actually goes back to the subject we've been talking about, the difference, if there is one, between classical and contemporary dance and modern dance. For years, there was almost a war between modern dance and ballet. And Isadora Duncan was a renegade, and Martha Graham embraced the use of the floor, and the techniques didn't mix, and there was a division. In the 70s, the wall came tumbling down, and specifically with this work called Deuce Coupe, Beach Boy music, so it had a great popular appeal. A ballerina throughout the work was pivotal. She was on the stage the entire time for about 35 minutes, and she danced the dictionary of classical ballet terminology in alphabetical order. So that you see how reverential Twyla was with the her respect and regard for classical ballet. Meanwhile, we were dancing in contemporary dance forms, in balletic dance forms, and doing the Frug, the Boogaloo, the Jerk, all of that from the popular dances of that era. That was a huge breakthrough. A wall came down. And after that, there was quite a blend of the forms. And today's dancer is quite capable of not only crossing over but integrating all of these dance techniques.
So are the dancers today, maybe it's the wrong word, are they better than the dancers of 30 years ago?
Well, that's a hard word, better.
Right.
Bob Fosse called us actors. I was in Bob Fosse's show called Dancin'. Are they better actors? Sometimes they are if they're thoughtful about the creation of a character. In some ways, that's more difficult than actual dance technique, the integration of your characterization, and it could be just your personality if it's a pure dance piece, but How are you engaging the audience and bringing in elements of surprise? That's why I said how, why, when, where, what. The questions that you have to ask, which any actor is also asking through the course of a creative process and then in performance itself.
Well, Bill, thank you for your time.
Sure.
And congratulations again on 17 years well spent and all the contributions to the Kansas City Ballet. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Mine too.
All the best in the future too, Bill.
Thanks.